the stats, the salt, the sanity. And every so often, they talk about sports, too.
Here is Eric Dorsch, Russ Ivanek, and Justin Marcus. This is Armchair Sports Talk. All we hear is radio.
Here's a little pre for the show. I got a little surprise for the guys today. Is if you listen to the show, you know, I like to throw them some curveballs because I don't want to seem like the least prepared person on this show. And that happens way too often. So,
sorry, Chief.
I'm not going to tell you who made this list. It's a couple years old. None of the currents are on there, but that's justifiable. We've been talking a lot about the Red Wings and all the greats over the years. Here are the top 25 Red Wings of all time. By this list, I'm going to read them all the way through. So let me get through them and then I'll let you guys go. Number 25, Darren McCarty.
Oh, we're doing it by number. Got it. 24, Rob Hobert.
There
number,
you go.
23, Schneider.
Nope.
I got this.
Yeah,
I get this.
You can do this. Number 24, Chris Draper.
No.
Oh, no, he wore 33.
Number,
also, what?
No. Number 23, Vladimir Konstantinov.
Wow, did we forget how numbers work?
Number 22. Number 22, Larry Murphy.
Okay, he was sneaky good.
21.
Go ahead, sorry.
21, Slava Fetisov.
Above Konstantinov?
Yeah, I don't.
Number
See, that's,
20.
That's where things start felt like you're saying names, but when you start doing the comparison, that's when like I want to maybe even come back to the last five.
To... we're going to come back. We're going to come back. I'm going to let you guys go all the way through this. Number 20. I'm going to pronounce this last name wrong.
Robert Lang, no. Also worked on it.
Marcel Pronovost.
Oh, Pronovost. Yeah. Hall of Famer. Yeah.
Marcel Pronovost.
I'm okay with him up there.
19, Shelley. 18,
I can live with that.
18, Proby. 17. 17, the professor, Igor Larionov.
Ooh, see, I'd flip all three of those all the
what
way
What are
around.
These criteria?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Number 16.
Is this like sorted by Google searches?
Maybe. 16. John Ogrodnik.
Oh, John Ogrodnik is a better Red Wing than Proby, Konstantinov, Larionov, Merv. I'd take Drapes over him.
Ready?
No.
Reed Larson, number 15.
Okay.
First of the more modern era for not. But first, the one we can say we watched their entire career and remember it all. 14, Henrik Zetterberg. 13, Pavel Datsyuk.
Why can't they? Why did they be so next to each other? Okay.
I might push them a little higher, but yeah, I like that they're next to each other.
I can promise you Russ will push both of them over this guy. 12, Chris Osgood.
Oh, God.
Wolf.
Wait, hang on. Who is he going to be surrounded by in this list? Because normally when he's surrounded by talent, he's somewhere good.
Yeah, well, Datsyuk and Zetterberg on one side. Let's see what Hall of Fame blue liner on the other.
Brendan Shanahan is number 11.
Okay. Also surrounded Oscar.
Yep.
Cool.
Number 10, Norm Ullman.
Okay, it's a throwback. You can make the case.
No, this is a throwback, but this is one where I believe, because now we are officially in the top 10. Ullman was 10. Number 9, Red Kelly.
Yeah.
Number
took way too long to get his number retired.
Number 8, Sergei Fedorov.
Okay. I'd put him in the top 10.
I'd also suck up Konstantinov higher because now I know where Fedorov's at. Like, just bring him up.
7, Sid Abel.
Okay.
Okay. I'd put Fedorov above, but all right.
Number 6, Terrible Ted.
Okay.
Number 5. Now, this is where I want to get into. This is the order they gave us. I want to see how much you agree with the order. It shouldn't be a surprise who the top 5 names I'm going to say are, but I'm going to say them in this order, and I want to know what you think, because we had this debate not more than 2 weeks ago. Number 5.
Right. So this is the part where the rap breaks down.
This is the part where the rap breaks down. Number 5. Russ's favorite player, Terry Sawchuk.
Okay.
Question. Okay.
Number 4. Alex Delvecchio.
Okay.
Number 3, the perfect human, Nick Lindstrom. All right, here's where it gets fun. Number two, Gordie Howe.
Ooh.
Number one, the captain, Steve Yzerman.
Like,
oh my god, what are the criteria for this list?
What, the top two picks have to be a recency bias, a sprinkle in some old dudes,
oh my god,
and piss me off on the tail end? Like that.
Oh, this is clickbait.
That was dumb.
No, listen. This isn't clickbait.
Best 25 this, Red Wings of all time. This, you won't believe who's number one.
Listen, this... No, really. This list was made by a site I guarantee all of us use somewhat regularly. Maybe not a ton, but we all use it. It's not...
Pornhub put out this list.
DataDumpForYou.org.
So I'm just curious. This list, no real modern players outside of Pavel and Zetterberg. Jay, thoughts on this list? Where are you going to poke the holes? Where are you going to say, okay, they did it right?
If you're going to recognize a different style of hockey and older, much, much, much older players, you can't just arbitrarily fucking sprinkle them around. Because they're like, oh, put a walnut over there, and now you got a cake. That's not how that works. I agree. I agree with Yzerman. How and where'd they have Lindstrom? They had him three. Okay, so I can
Lindstrom, Howe, and Yzerman.
I can live with that. Osgood needed, if he's going to be around his talent, he needs to be the base of his talent. If you're going to build a cake again, Osgood's like they just. No. And then if go back to the beginning. McCarty.
What do you want?
McCarty at 25. Who was at 24?
Draper.
Draper shouldn't have made the top 50, but continue. Who's at 23?
All right. 23 is Vladdy.
Him up. They
okay.
They should be so much.
Okay. This All right. Number 22 was Murphy.
Fine. He's just big.
And then Slava Fetisov and Marcel Pronovost are the top in the last of the 20s.
Okay, so does this list mention anything about, like, only time as a Red Wing, or, like, are we basing this on quality or just Red Wingness? Like, what's happening here? Because if you want to say, like, embody the spirit of a Red Wing and other old man bullshit, then sure, you can say McCarty was, was Hockey Town Prime, the spirit of it, and maybe we can talk about it. But that's also a complete disconnect from any quality of player.
Hasek.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Right here.
Shit.
All of these things, as well as respectable tenure with the team. Sorry, you won't find Brett Hall or Luke Robitaille on here, or what I used to select a group of candidates. So they had to actually play for the Wings long enough for this. So I mean, you look at this. I don't know all these guys, but a majority of the people on this list, save a couple, went coast to coast with the Wings.
Well, Fetisov came over like when he was old.
I get that, but I'm just saying a good.
That was part
you take Sergei, you take Shanny, Draper obviously was traded. We could say McCarty left for a couple years, but he just took a vacation in Calgary and then came right back.
Took a paycheck.
Chelly obviously, but Chelly played 37 years for the Red Wings because he didn't retire until he was 80. Yeah.
And somehow only half of his career with Detroit. But, like, Larry Murphy's the same. He came at the end. He played, five seasons with Detroit, but he had a 21-year career.
Okay. I'm just, like I said, this is a list. I'm putting it out there to you guys. Russ, where were you okay with? Did they do your boy Terry wrong and put him too low? Where are you poking the biggest hole in this?
Well, I just wanted to first let you know that I appreciate you bringing this list to us because we're all looking for toilet paper now.
This is a good like 20 pages of toilet paper for you.
Okay. There you go. Hopefully you printed it on 2-ply. I'm fine with, I'll focus on the top five because I think everything after that, geez, we could probably go a half hour just in arguing some of those, but the top five, I'm fine with who they are. Knowing that I grew up idolizing Yzerman, I can't put him at one. I can't put him over Mr. Hockey. Like, other than that, I mean, it's Lidstrom at five. You could really make the argument versus Lidstrom and Yzerman. But if they're 2-3, I'm fine. Ted and Sawchuk, I'm okay with it there. Sawchuk was transcendent, but if you're doing like Red Wingness, like dude played for not just the Wings. He was pretty damn good, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't just with the Wings. He deserves to have a number retired, but I'm okay with him at five. Like this is okay. It's whoever made the list probably was celebrating that today was 4-20, though. I'll put it that way.
All right, here's something for you though, because Jay, you pointed it out. 25 guys on this list. We've already said that there are a couple guys that made this list that maybe have no business being on this list. A little surprising that in the top 25 players we've ever had, and we've had a lot of big name players, there's only two goalies on this list.
Yep. You could grab Miracle. You can grab Vernon. You can grab Hasek. I personally would take Vernon because he smoked a cigar on the ice, if that's the criteria that we're fucking with here. Red Wings lore equals top 25. Dude had a stogie ready to go. Yeah, I mean, you only have two goalies. I would take Draper or Malpe out and easily put any of those goalies I just listed in there. I don't care where they're at in the order.
Well, Malpe didn't make this list for obvious reasons.
Yeah, thank God.
No, I got you.
Draper or Murphy. Okay. Like, I would take Hasek over Murphy in the top 25. Yeah.
I absolutely would, too.
Yeah, even though he was only there for, like, 4 or 5 years or whatever. Like, yeah. But other than that, I kind of get it. It's like, even – I hate going by this as a measure of a goalie's talent, but go by wins total. You have Sawchuk, you have Osgood, you have a gap, and then Jimmy Howard, and then there's a huge gap between Howard and Harry Lumley, who's next. Like, it's –
a Harry what?
Slim as far as career. a Harry Lumley. After the show, I'll
sponsored
tell you
by Manscaped.
Oh, God. All right. Well, now, real quick, because like I said, this list is older. It's not like 20 years old, obviously, because Datsuk and Zetterberg are on here. But I want to ask you, has to be drafted after 2010. Is there a player that should have made this list that didn't for Red Wings? So of a current day wing. Russ, you pointed out, it's a big jump, but Jimmy's right there in wins, like in that list of wins. We've had other talented players. Is there someone, Jay, that didn't make this list, that should have made this list?
Maybe because we had Mike Modano for a hot second until he broke his thumb. I mean, probably not Cronwall, no, and that's the end of the defense for a decade. Everything else is like middling, and we had the Tutus and the Koliakovos and the McDonalds and this revolt, the Alfredsons. Like, we had so many spare parts that came in and out. Can't do it to Larkin yet. I don't know. Mickey Redman. I know he wasn't drafted, but he also wasn't on the list.
A little surprising that Redman didn't make it with his soda pops and his undying allegiance.
Put him over Draper and McCarty.
I put Elsa Russ. Vodka on there before Draper and McCarty.
Hey, it's a ginger ale.
Russell's anyone from the, you know, the 10 on that didn't make this list, 2010 on?
No, I kind of just looked up Detroit stats since 2010, just cumulative. Larkin's fifth, and Larkin's first year was 2015. So he's played half the decade, and he has the fifth most points on the team since then. No, it's Zetterberg, it's Datsuk, then it's Cronwall, Nyquist, Larkin. That's where we're at. No. Outside of Zetterberg and Datsuk, there's no one that should be in the top.
Can I make one revision? I'm making a future revision. Open up that Datsuk-Zetterberg hole and put Larkin right in there. And bump Zetterberg down two spots.
Okay, so then you're saying, according to you, you're saying Zeddy goes to 15, Larkin goes to 14, and Pavs is at 13?
I'm just saying what's going to happen with the, hopefully, the Joe Valenos and the Larkins. There's going to be this sandwich effect where players are going to be infused and probably separating those two away from each other. I'm hungry. I'm talking about cake. I'm talking about sandwiches.
I know. You have built a cake 3 times already, and I don't know how to feel.
Oh, God.
I'm also playing SimCity on my phone, so that's messing with my head.
Attaboy. 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 Oh, got it. Well, it was worth a shot. I like the reactions I got. Jay, I'm so sorry, but you were wrong. That list is perfect. It was done perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what we find out.
I really. to be honest, half those names would have been on, wouldn't have been on there because I never would have known who they were.
That's fair.
Next week we have the top 25 Pistons all time. I'm
sure. Oh God.
led by Aaron Aflalo,
number one all time, baby. Andre Drummond for the win. Ben Wallace would be the number one pick, by the way. You know that. He's the best there ever was.
He deserves to be in the top 25.
You're going to will this to happen for him.
Hall of Fame, though.
I have this list in my briefcase right now. I can pull it out.
Also, does Ben Wallace have you on a retainer? Like, does he just pay you every now and then to keep mentioning
I fear
him?
The fro. I really do fear the fro. So,
that's
moving on, we're going to talk wings later. I figure we've kind of done everything we can in the way of NFL draft analysis on where we think they're going. And we're, you know, it's a couple days away. We've talked about trying to do a show after the first and second round, a little bit of a recap. But for right now, I want to talk about some of the best and worst picks the Lions have ever made. And we actually all have our top 10. Well, some of us have top 10s. Others have a couple names on a list that they think the Lions drafted at one point or another. But before we do that, I do want to ask this one question, because it seems like once, since we started this show, about once every couple of months, I ask Justin this question because he's angry and salty and this is fun. Justin, Martha Ford has said multiple times that this is a win or be gone year for Patricia and Quinn. What I want to ask you is, does one winning season immediately get them both off the hot seat and buy them time? And if not, or I mean, if so, who's the new hot seat coach in Detroit?
So for winning, it's not just, at least for me, it's not just having a 9-7 record. Winning for me with what we have on the field needs to be win the division, host a playoff game. That's exactly where we left off with the Lions. That's exactly where they got to pick up. The bar does not get lowered because our success rate is lowering as well. So they need to win the division. And if they were to do that, that probably gives them another year. These are baby steps. So win the division, and you probably still are in the hottest seat in Detroit. I could put Blashill in there just because he was a consistent with the team prior to its demise, whereas like Gardenhire came in the middle of the rebuild. Gardy gets this old man free pass with the Tigers because he's like, hey, you all suck and I'm old, right? So it's Blashill probably right behind them, but they have the hottest seat in the state right now. Even Harbaugh is probably protected in some way. So.
He's protected by that U of M greatness. That's why he's protected.
Oh,
no, but let me ask you though, Jay, at what point or what is it going to take? Obviously Super Bowl is a little too far-fetched of a reach to say that's when you're off the hot seat. So what do Quinn and Patricia have to do before you, Martha Ford can kind of say, all right, you bought yourself a couple of years.
If that makes them more money, I guarantee you that's the only bottom line statistic that Martha Ford's looking at. If they get to push more hot dogs and parking and swag and, you know, Tua's names on the back of her jersey, I don't know. If they do that, they're probably sticking around because Martha's making money.
Russ?
That's sadly the cynical answer. That's probably true. jump back to your original question, I kind of echo exactly Jay's statement that I literally have written down, not if it's 9-7 or 10-6 with the playoffs. Like this regime started on the back of the phrase 9-7 isn't good enough. Like that's why Caldwell got fired. So you can't come in and then go 9-7 three out of 5 years and call it good enough. Like, no, win a playoff game. I want to see one in my life. Like, I don't think I'm being too greedy. I'm not even asking to win the Super Bowl. I'm asking to win one playoff game. There's an extra team that gets into the playoffs this year. Be that team. That's fine. Be the seventh seed. Cool. Try and win a game. I mean, yes, the division would be nice. Aaron Rodgers still exists, so I don't have faith in this team. But it's got to start there, and you've got to either actually execute this value brand, you know, store-bought Patriots replica that you're trying to be, or you got to actually decide, hey, we are what we are, and do your thing and do it well. Like, define something. Say, this is how this team is. it looked like they were kind of rolling with that with Bevel, of the feature one receiver per week, run in between it, have Stafford be efficient, and then he blew up and got hurt. But have an identity, win some damn games, then we can talk about it. Blashill's seat, though, he would be the only one, but his seat's kind of more like the folding lawn chair, just ready to be put away. It can't really get hot. He's expecting to put it back in the car. There has to be expectations for the seat to be hot, and that is 100% with Patricia and Quinn in Detroit.
I completely agree. For me, it's a – listen, 9-7, 10-6, those are technical winning seasons, but we all remember Bob Quinn fired Jim Caldwell for a 9-7 season, so – you can't expect to keep your job on a 9-7 season. Yes, got to make the playoffs. To me, it's a little bit of a make the playoffs. Get into the playoffs, play a playoff game. That at least, I think, buys you one more year. Obviously, winning that playoff game helps out a lot. I agree with you. But I see, that's the thing. I feel like if you look at it right now, Minnesota has made some questionable moves that I don't really think helped their team. Chicago doesn't know who their starting quarterback is right now. At least I don't think they have a clue. It's you, yeah. That's
fine.
Yeah,
I was waiting to tell you. But.
Good for you, man. Good for you. Yes, Aaron Rodgers is still in Green Bay. That's still in the division. He's only got Devontae Adams to throw to. So we'll see what happens here. This is a year where if the Lions can stay healthy and stay, you know, not make a stupid move in this draft, at least winning the NFC North should be in the realm of possibility.
See, like that's where like my like I've been burned before feeling comes back when Rodgers went down that one year. I was like, okay, the door is open, take it. Nah.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm still it's still in that realm of possibility. But yes, like you said, we've been burned too many times before. We've gone into games where we need to win one of two to clinch the division and we go 0-2. So it's happened before, it'll happen again. Speaking of the replica Patriots, we almost had a false announcement again. That fake Rappaport thing popped up on my phone popped up on my phone a couple days ago, and it said the Lions have traded their first round pick to the New England Patriots for like a third and a fourth round pick. And I had to look real quick because I saw Ian Rappaport, then realized it was the fake one. But and again, that sounds like the Lions worshiping the altar of Bill Belichick. As for, I think winning a playoff game buys them a couple years. I think that's when you got to look at them and say, okay, you did the first step of what we're asking you to do, but there can't be regression. You can't go 11-5, make the playoffs, beat whoever in the wild card or whatever, and then go 8-8 the following year. That's what I'm saying. It bought you some time, but it didn't buy you the ability to, you know, get careless again. Blashill has to be the hot seat, though. I agree with you, Jay. Gardenhire inherited this mess from Brad Ausmus and somehow the guy that's still there, Al Avila. But still, he inherited this mess. He's got a lot to fix. He's got a lot to weed through. I'll agree that Ken Holland left it in a mess, but that's no excuse for the fact that you coached this team for multiple years with that mess and couldn't even do anything with it. The Pistons... I still think the Pistons are a team that could be competitive in the East. There's not a lot of talent in the East to have to compete with right now. So I think it has to be Blashill. You can't say Izzo. You can't say Harbaugh. You can't say Juwan Howard. You can't say that guy you guys hired that I'm blanking on his name right now.
Yeah, can't say D'Antonio anymore.
Who won't be there for more than 2 years, but still, you can't say any of those guys. So it has to be Blashill. I mean, and I honestly believe it is Blashill for the fact that I think Stevie wants to fix the locker room first, get the players he wants in place, and then it's that thing of, okay, we were bad, but now we have a chance to be good. Let me get a guy in here that can actually help us be good.
So that's what happened in his career. That's how Bowman got pushed in when they thought that they had the right formula. They're like, let's go grab a guy who wins.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm saying. Like Eisenman realizes, listen, we're going to be shitty right now. Go ahead. We'll pay you to coach this team. I mean, you can keep amassing a 10-72 record while we get bad. And then when he realizes the pieces are where they need to be, okay, listen, we liked you. We appreciate it. Grand Rapids job wide open for you. Have fun.
I want a T-shirt
I want a t-shirt of Blashill sitting in the weaved lawn chair on the front, and then him holding his lawn chair walking on the back.
With the little, like, stick in that back.
It's like present day, future.
Only if we can label his lawn chair the hot and sweaty.
Absolutely.
Hot and sweaty.
For those of you who don't know, Armchair Sports Talk, we're starting merchandising. We just got to figure out how to do it.
We've got a ton of great ideas for shirts.
We just haven't made them yet.
Lemonade stand.
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't think that Patricia and Quinn go anywhere after this year. I think they probably have to do the safe, smart, we want to keep our jobs kind of thing, because either of them get fired, they're not going into a great situation. Patricia would be lucky to get a D coordinator job anywhere after the defense he put on the field the last 2 years. And Bob Quinn's proven when you give him the helm, he doesn't know what to do unless the Hall of Fame coach and quarterback are already in place. So we'll see what happens with it. But luckily, I'm looking at my list, and I honestly can say that I don't think these guys picked – oh, maybe they picked one or two of them. We're going to go through our worst and best picks the Lions have made ever. Obviously, we can't really reach super far back. I mean, we can reach a decent way back, but a lot of these guys we don't really remember playing. So we're going to go through these lists. The way I want to do it, my list is in no order. I just put down the picks as they went. Let's say we'll have Russ go through his list. Obviously, we're going to have similarities. There's going to be same names in places. So let's go through your list, Russ, on the worst picks ever, and then we'll break it down and move on over to the next guy.
Okay, so I did the sin of not actually putting them in order. So my bad, except I do have my number one, because this one was obvious to me in my young little brain at the time. And it was obvious to me now. Back in 2005, a scant 15 years ago, little 15-year-old Russ was at a baseball tournament when he heard that the Lions selected Mike Williams out of USC, who sat out a full year, was overweight, wasn't really working out for people, and looked just straight up bad. It was part of that infamous wide receiver run of first-round picks, which did not help things. But I don't understand how in the top 10 you pick a wide receiver who hadn't played in a while. You assume all the risk when you really didn't need to. I mean, the 2005 draft, I mean, I'll pull it up right now. That's where Braylon went.
Can tell you right Williams. Now. DeMarcus Ware.
It was not good. I mean, they took Mike Williams.
Derek Johnson, Roddy White, and Aaron Rodgers were all taken in the next 10 picks.
Mm.
Yeah, the next five players were Pro Bowlers, and you picked an out-of-shape wide receiver who hadn't played in a year and looked more like offensive tackle Mike Williams, who was taken the year prior by the Bills. That's just mind-numbingly dumb. So the rest of them aren't ranked, but that had to be my number one, because even as a 15-year-old, I was – that's really where I was disillusioned that football people are smarter than me right then and then. Maybe they don't know what the hell they're talking about. It's a coming-of-age story, really. Another one of those, Brandon Pettigrew. You don't take a one-dimensional tight end in the first round. Four of the next six picks turned out to be Pro Bowlers. One of the other ones was Michael Moore. You could have at least sold some jerseys by picking him. But Pettigrew was a tremendous blocking tight end, but you don't take a one-dimensional blocking tight end in the first round. Even if he's an all-pro blocker, you're not going to get the value for it. Lakin Tomlinson was the next one. Again, same thing. It's a non-premium position. He literally has to be an all-pro to justify this pick, and that's way too high of a bar to put on a rookie in the first round. Put him and you in a position to succeed. They didn't. Speaking of position to succeed, Charles Rogers. Here's where we drop the Stephen A. drop of stay off the weed. Also, Andre Johnson was the next pick and the obvious pick at the time. Andre Ware ended up playing 14 games, started six in his entire career, was picked seventh overall. They needed QB, sure. The class wasn't good, but come on. It wasn't a good system fit, and for a team that desperately needed a quarterback, he couldn't crack the starting lineup. Speaking of bad quarterbacks, next one, Joey Blueskys. All of the quarterbacks in that class were awful, but that's my childhood. That's
You're taking us back, man. I'm learning a lot right there. Now.
And it just hurts.
But see, I think we can make an argument that David Carr was just Reggie a bad Rogers. Because he was in an expansion team. Like, he had to literally wait for that team to get built out.
Right. He gets more credit. No, he gets more credit because he was absolutely destroyed. And he was, a lot of the same reason why Joey wasn't a good idea is that there was no support system around him.
Absolutely.
And they weren't willing to build one for him. So it was a bad organizational strategy as well. Next one's Reggie Rogers. He went 7th overall. Two career starts, 15 games. That's almost as many months as he spent in prison after that, after a DUI where 3 people ended up dead. Not a good pick. The next one is my combo 2 for I kind of teased to you guys earlier. Just so you know, the Lions have drafted 6 Hall of Famers in the first round in the entire history of the team. Not great. Not great. 3 of them never played for the Lions. This next one's Otto Graham and Y.A. Tittle. Way throwbacks, but both Hall of Fames, both All Pros, both never played a single snap for the Lions because they decided they would either rather play for the Browns or not the NFL, the AAFC for Y.A. Tittle. You can't do worse than never playing. I mean, it's a literal zero, and they were Hall of Famers, so it stings all the more. Javid Best was my next one. Kind of unfair because concussions are what took him out, but also you knew about the concussions going in, that he was a higher risk because of his history, and they traded up 4 spots and gave away the pick that ended up being Everson Griffin. You don't assume all of the risk on a risky player already. It's just awful draft strategy. Categorically, I have to say it's a bad pick. How it ended up made it even worse. And then, last but not least, the obvious one, the one we all came here for.
tell me about that.
I wasn't going to drop the ball here. Yeah, I'd rather not, actually. I'd rather not point to all of the tremendous players that came after him or how it made no sense to pick a tight end out of the vaunted college program that is UNC. Like, no, who could have seen this coming? Literally everyone. That was one that looked bad at the time. He was never really given a chance with the fans, but he never really performed, and it took him going to another city and getting just a tremendous statistical aberration of a season to do anything. It stings. And yep. I'm pretty sure he's on his 3rd team now already. So that's
off to the Pittsburgh Steelers.
What that good year did for him. But, that's my 10. And the Steelers haven't had a good tight end.
Well, I'm going to pick up right where you left off, actually, because, one, he nearly wasn't given a chance with the fans, but he never wanted a chance with the fans. You can't sit there and tweet – left and right at fans throwing crap out and expect it. So I could pick up right where you left off. Eric Ebron absolutely made my list. Oh, by the way, Russ didn't want to do it, so I'll do it. Taylor Lewan, Odell Beckham Jr., Aaron Donald, Kyler Fuller, Ryan Shazier, Zach Martin, and CJ Mosley were the next 7 picks.
There's a trend. There's a trend.
I am going to I'm just saying they're every one of those guys is, every one of those guys is perennial top players on their teams at their position they play. So it's insane. Like I said, my list is in no order, but they're just, as I went through it, they're the players that stood out. The first one on my list is in 2006, the Detroit Lions selected Ernie Sims, a linebacker. That was a bad draft to begin with. You're talking about Matt Leinart, Vince Young, a guy who played for us later, Reggie Bush. But we needed a quarterback. Jay Cutler was sitting right there, the guy with the cannon arm that could throw it to anywhere on the field, which is exactly what we needed because he needed to be able to throw it 80 yards with only 2 seconds of protection. So, for me, Ernie Sims was a terrible pick. He never worked out. He was just kind of almost like a Jared Davis, just didn't fit where we used him. And no one ever wanted to try to put him anywhere else. Second one, of course, Joey Harrington, for obvious reasons. Next after that, Javid Best. Listen, Javid Best, we knew the problems we were getting into with him. and we didn't seem to care. And we were just looking for that explosive running back, and unfortunately, he wasn't there. Or he wasn't the guy we needed. I'm going to pogo over my next one because I need to give myself time to explain this. Next, Charles Rogers, obvious reasons, Andre Johnson, Terrell Suggs, and Marcus Trufant, all picked within the next 9 picks. Eric Ebron, we already talked about. 2009, Pettigrew. Percy Harvin, Vontae Davis, and Clay Matthews were in the next 5 picks taken. All three of those guys would have filled needs we had at the time. Would have easily filled them. 2004, Mike Williams, obviously, for those reasons. DeMarcus Ware, Sean Marion, Derek Johnson. These last two are more just for the fun because of who went after them. In 1996, we selected Reggie Brown, linebacker. Marvin Harrison and Ray Lewis were the following picks.
Oh, God.
Just put that into perspective. Before I circle back to my big one that I think is going to confuse but also help me explain. In 1998, with the 20th pick, I have nothing against this guy. Never saw him play. Don't remember him. We selected Terry Fair, a defensive back. Like him, sure, he's great. Randy Moss was the next goddamn pick.
Could you imagine if we just got one of these big names? Just one.
But you let him go.
If we might have more than
you let him go to a division rival with the next pick. Oh, God.
Yeah. There were some character issues with him coming out of Marshall. But yeah.
Listen, if T.O. is justified to be in this NFL for the character flaws he has, Randy Moss was fine. There. I would live with him mooning the fans every game. Don't ever
watch that.
And the last one on my list, this one might be a little bit of a hot take, but I had to put him on here. Gerald McCoy, Trent Williams, Eric Berry, Russell Okung, and then Joe Hayden all went in this draft. In 2010, with the second overall pick, we selected Ndamukong Suh.
Ooh.
Let me justify.
No.
Okay, fine.
Go ahead. Sorry.
The reason I'm gonna have him on this list is, yes, was a great player, is a dominant force in that line. But I would also put up the argument that he probably cost us just as much as he helped us. Penalty after penalty, getting suspended for things. He literally was a detriment because no ref, no team was going to give him a fair shakeout on that field for what he could do. And I would be willing to bet that if you went back and looked at it, and I'm not, Russ, asking you to break this down, so please don't feel the need to. I would be willing
Thank
to bet that
you.
In most games, the penalties and on-field issues he caused were about as much of a detriment as was the sacks and tackles he got us. So while he was a great pick, he was a good player, I would be willing to bet that in those times he played for us, he probably cost us about as much as he helped us.
I don't know. There's just a degree of what he did that he was just a beast. He was just strong. But, he was just walking over Rodgers. He didn't mean to step on.
But I'm saying he was. I will agree with you that he was a player ahead of his time, kind of thing, because he was such a physical feat. But the problem is when you're cleanly tackling Jay Cutler, but you're also doing it with such veracity that they flag you for it, or you pull Marion Barber's hair out of his head, but that's not illegal. But you get flagged for it. That hurts us because we can't help that he's such a physical marvel. But at the same time, the league, like, it's same with that catch rule. Unless you're going to alter the rule to fit the player, Ndamukong Suh was never going to, was going to get flagged for everything he did, even if it was clean, because it didn't look clean.
Yeah, I kind of blame us, though. If we would have drafted Cutler 2 years prior to Stafford, maybe Cutler doesn't get thrown like a rag doll and Sue doesn't get a penalty. So
yeah, but he would have been like forearm shivering Matt Stafford on another team.
I'd pay to watch that.
So like I said, it's a hot take because he's just as easily someone that could be in the best picks we ever made. But unfortunately, it's just what it is. He probably cost us as many games as he helped us with penalties and on the field problems.
Mm-hmm. And does it help at all that they used top 5 pick on an interior lineman? I mean, does that help your argument at all? Because that's a
No,
not exactly
not really.
Premier position.
Russ, are you getting like a haircut or something right now? What is going on? Oh, I couldn't tell the way you
were, towel neck sweater,
the way you were
man.
Pulling it. It looked like a towel for a second. I thought you were getting like a haircut or something.
No. Yeah, no, I'm getting ready for my post-game interview. I've got the towel.
Well, would you show up every day? I'm just trying to do the best I can. We're really looking on the next week.
Just trying to, you know, just kind of get pucks in deep, you know, and just got to go out there and win one for the boys, you know. It's a team game, and you got to treat it that way.
Okay, nah, that's enough of that. Jay, over to you now. I think we gave you enough names. You should be able to fill out a pretty decent list there.
I only had two missing. Listen,
okay,
and I'm not going to repeat. You guys already made arguments around many players I also had.
No. Feed us the Eric Ebron hate. We want it. Feed it.
Oh, just hang on one
here's
second.
Your platform.
All right, Joey Harrington is just laughable. He's on my list. First of all, his name is Joey. It's an inferior male name. Everyone knows this, so that's his fault. Charles.
How you doing?
There's the one exception. Charles Rogers, 3 years in, 3 years out. Bye bye. Javid Best, more like Javid Worst. Injuries, that sucked. Getting away from the comedic side of this, one player I'm surprised neither of you guys had. I remember distinctively when he got drafted out of BYU, certain people were saying that he was a project, as if there was this cachet to him that you didn't know what he was going to be, and there was risk assumed. Russ mentioned risk with prior picks as well. Ezekiel Ansah. He was injury prone like a mother on the tail end of his career with the Lions. He had a great first season and then he got hurt. And then we wondered, what is this project going to be? And it was a failed project. So I had Ansah on my top 10 of worst draft picks. I do have the Charles. We talked about Charles Rogers. I have Pettigrew for obvious reasons. Being like drafted for being a blocking specialty is like, hey, I'm a great present rapper. Like, that's not first round qualities that I'm looking for. So that's, you know, I went from food to wrapping presents. Lankin Tomlinson, in and out like none other. He came and gone. The obvious one of Eric Ebron. I think it was Paul. Shout out to Paul. We do this once in a while. We shout out to Paul. He had a mask that had like Ebron's number on it because it wouldn't catch a goddamn thing. So Ebron was just a very... put Ebron in a non-social media era, he's probably just a bad player. Put him into the world that we live in, he is like glorified for being an idiot, and he makes the list for everyone. If you're 30-year-old in Detroit, he's on your list. Maybe this is my hot take of my worst top 10. He's kind of in a purgatory. He hasn't had time to prove himself yet. I thought maybe under Bevel it would be a lot better for a first year, but I actually have Hockenson on my list for worst. Given okay. what we've done with Pettigrew, what we have done with Ebron, and now what we're trying to do with Hockenson, we're on our third go here, folks, of drafting a tight end in the first round. All of them, I imagine, were under different coaches and different yep. owners. I don't know where he's going to land, but if he's going to land on a list, it's going to be worst before it's best.
Okay. Go ahead. I want to ask you a question though, because I see where you're going with it. I believe you tweeted and or made this comment after the game. No, listen, did that first game kind of raise expectations that he wasn't able to live up to for the rest of the year?
No, he came to the appropriate table at the restaurant. He was drafted in the first round. He needed to have that first game. It was fitting that he did that. And then the decline went. And whether it was because of the, you know, put one guy in the spotlight system that we had, it was nice to see it happen on day one. Yes, I tweeted out we drafted the next Gronk. I will not forget I did that. But like, that tailed off really quickly. And I don't know why it happened. So that's why it could lead to being up. There's a reason why Pettigrew and Ebron are both on probably all of our top 10 worst draft picks.
Oh yeah.
Someone has already cleared that path for Hockenson. So he's trending in that direction if it continues.
But at the same time, he also doesn't have a lot to live up to. The last great tight end we had was Charlie Sanders in like the 80s. So There's not like he could be a middle of the road statistically tight end. He's still the second best tight end we've had in the last 50 years. That's not to be mean. You just, I mean, you could start naming the names here, man. Like, we had no real great tight ends for a long, long time. I can't even tell you who our tight ends were from, like, the early 2000s because I don't know that we had one. We had Corey Schlesinger.
Hey, Joe Foria could twerk like nobody's business.
He got it. But, like, that, there's...
And if that
see, there's my point,
the
though,
list.
Right there. If we could pick up a Jesse James or a Joe Foria, why are we wasting assets in the first round? If we can go out and grab pieces that we want, we can grab Jimmy Graham. Like, we could just go find cute things and throw it in there. Why waste top talent? So, he doesn't have big shoes to fill, but he's got a big path to clear out.
Hey, listen, I'm with you. There's a lot, a lot of problems.
So,
yep.
That's all I got.
I like it, Jay. Well, you're on a roll, so you might as well keep going. Give us the best.
Oh,
no, this should be easy, man. listen, I would be willing to bet that even if we did this in order, we should all at least have four or five of the same names on this list. So give it to me. However you want to do it, whether it's in order, top to bottom.
So it's not in any order. I will leave the obvious. Maybe you guys have better ways of featuring those players than I could. It just wouldn't be appropriate for my dumbass to try to put some nice things together. A couple names that did make my list, though. Jeff Backus is on my list just because he stayed with the team for 11 fucking years. Mm-hmm. That in itself is an accomplishment. Okay. And he was pretty good. Nick Fairley was one that he leaned more towards good than bad for me. Just because he...
Like at the buffet?
No, I mean, I think it was 2000... When was our defense, like, the shit? It was like 4 or 5 years ago? No, not like stinky poop. I mean, like, we actually had a good season. It was when we had Sue and Fairley on the same side. I don't know. Maybe it's personal preference. I liked Nick Fairley a little bit. But his counterpart in Sue, give me the chaos. Sue did cause problems on the field, but I felt like it was worth the baggage of a player. Like, there's some guys you take on their baggage because they're just a freak athlete. Sue was that constant drawing a double team to free up other talent if we had talent at the time, okay? So Sue did have some good tangibles that I liked about him.
This is why I don't think Justin should be allowed to drink when he does the podcast.
I'm drinking coffee.
Yeah, probably a little bit of an Irish coffee there, man. Nick Fairley. All right. Let's go.
Great. He's at 10.
Okay.
I used my 10 as like a flex spot in fantasy football. You kind of put your neck out just a little bit, see what happens with
okay,
it.
Okay.
The top of my list is probably the same to all of yours, but number one with a bullet for me, if we're going to maybe spin it that way of who was the best of the best, because we kind of all have the same. I've got Kelvin up there. I've got him over Sanders. I've got him over Stafford. This man single-handedly was our weapon in our generation. Granted, I didn't get to see Barry play on Sundays, but Kelvin had rules created after him. Kelvin was a freak of nature. He was one of the first Lions I gravitated towards. So it's more of a personal pick, but I would be taking Kelvin over Stafford and Sanders.
Okay. All right.
Just to open up the door to your guys.
I'm going to step right in that door and take it over for you. Obviously those names are there. Talk about them in a minute. I decided to have a little bit of fun. So going to the bottom of my list.
Uh-oh.
The best picks the Lions made, my number 9, my number 10 is the last thing I'm going to say. So my number 9, the 2008 Lions draft class.
You picked the whole
the
damn
only
draft
reason,
class.
The whole draft class, for one reason. They were the draft class that led us to the 0-16 season and the acquiring of Matthew Stafford. So
how does a tease record have to be that one of the top 10 best first round picks they got were the one that helped them suck?
They will forever be known as the Lions draft class that led us right into 0-16 and the acquiring of Matthew Stafford, who was also on this list. Number eight, Jason Hansen. Jason Hansen is probably one of the top kickers ever to play the game. Sadly, for a long time, he was the best player on our team. And he should be in the Hall of Fame. I think it's going to happen for him. Yeah, Jason Hansen, plus a little bit of honor. I got to play golf with him one time. Nicest guy I've ever met. So much fun. Number seven, Ndamukong. Oh. Number seven, Ndamukong Suh. Like I said, I told you guys I had one guy on both lists. Ndamukong Suh is on this list for that reason. He was a freak of nature. I think if he had been able to clean it up when the league would have understood what kind of player they were dealing with, things would have been a little different. I mean, he probably would have had a great tenure with Detroit. Unfortunately, it's a little rocky. Number six, this guy wasn't drafted, but he needs to be on this list and be recognized. Don Muehlbach. The dude is the snapper of snappers. He is a beast. He has one job to do, and oh, does he do it so well. Wasn't drafted, but I think I'd make him Mr. Irrelevant just so he could be drafted and be on this list.
I love you breaking rules, by the way.
I gotta be like you every once in a while. Number five. Kind of like Jay with Hawk. It might be a little too early for this guy to be on this list, but I made a prediction that he was going to be this kind of player, and he is this kind of player. Number five, Kenny Golladay.
Wow.
I think he was a tremendous, tremendous pick for us. I think he's our number one for a long time to come if we can keep him happy. Apparently, Russ doesn't agree with me as he falls asleep. number four, sticking with the wide receiver core, Herman Moore. That was a great receiver for the Lions. Hurts that he didn't play his entire career here, but we took him in the first round, so I'm happy with it. Number three, Matthew Stafford. Wouldn't have gotten him without that 08 draft class. Shout out to them. Jay, you may not be 100% sold on him. I am. I think enough pieces work out around him, we're going to see something. And
oh, my God.
And number two and number one, you can interchange them how you want. I don't agree with Jay. I think it's Calvin, then Barry, but – either way, they're the best two players this team ever picked. Really, and what's weird, they're the best two players we ever picked. They're also the only two to retire dead in their prime because they didn't want to play for us anymore. It hurts. It hurts a lot. And then my number 10 for the best picks they ever made, they haven't made it yet. But finally, Isaiah Simmons, round one with the fifth pick of the 2020 NFL draft.
Oh, Thursday, my ESPN God.
Network, 8 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah. Yep. So that's my top 10. Like I said, how bad does a team have to be that I have to take an entire 0-16 draft class? That
volume bad.
But yeah. But Russ, there's my list for you, man.
Okay. Well, I'll jump right out in front of it and say I've got Barry 1, Calvin 2. That's the order. And I didn't order it past that, so we're off to a strong start. I mentioned earlier they drafted six Hall of Famers in the first round. The three that they did draft do make the list for me. Barry was one. God help me on this one. Alex Wojciechowicz started at center, started a linebacker, Hall of Famer. He makes it on there. Oh, there he is. Alex Karras is the other one.
Alex
he will
Karras,
be in the Hall of Fame this year's class. Also, he played Mongo in Blazing Saddles. That's enough to make the list as it is. We've talked about how bad the Lions are. Literally, he could have played one game. He's still on my top 10 just for that. Ripping through the rest of them, I did have Stafford as well, fastest of 40,000, holds all the important passing records in Lions franchise history, except for interceptions. He doesn't hold it yet, which is a little bit amazing on its own. Herman Moore, Lomas Brown, not for his work post-career, purely on the field. Mel Farr, Billy Sims, a pair of running backs. Mel Farr, fun fact, one of only four Lions to win the Offensive Rookie of the Year award. Barry Sanders is another one. Billy Sims, again. Mel Farr and then McCullough are the only four to do it. It's been a while, is what I'm trying to say. So good luck. And then Robert Bourchier is the last one. 10-plus sacks in 5 of 6 years in his prime. It's really tough to do better than that at the end of the first round. So he makes it up there. Plus, he was a small glimpse of hope and pride in the Lions growing up that has doomed me forever into this fandom. So thank you. Maybe. That's my tip. And
is this a drinking podcast?
Yeah, we drink while we do this. Should. It would help.
Yes, it is. Robert Porcher was on my list. I had him in as an alternate, I guess you could say. He was great. He was an awesome pick. Yeah, it's bad. It's not easy to get through that. only upside is I think you could say there's one, I think two future Hall of Famers on this list who have retired and they just aren't in there yet, Calvin and Jason Hansen. That'd be about it. I don't foresee Ndamukong. I would even argue that I don't think Ndamukong Suh lived up to the hype he had coming out. I mean, he had a great couple great years with the Lions, but really has fallen off. He's bounced around for the most part.
He lived up to it until he got that free agent contract, and then.
Yeah, exactly. That's your fault for going to the Miami Dolphins, man. The one team that'll screw you even more than we will. And then Matthew Stafford, outside chance of ever making the Hall of Fame unless he can do some stuff in the postseason. So we'll see what happens.
When he wins the next three Super Bowls. All right, Jay. We got this.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, Jay, it's time for you to have some fun. I know how much you love talking Detroit Red Wings. It's your, it's your favorite topic. So I want to ask you, why isn't Darren McCarty good enough to be on the top 25 list?
Oh, sweet Jesus.
No, no, I'm messing with you. Like I said, we've kind of done everything we can do in the way of the NFL draft. I mean, I think it would be absolutely ludicrous for us to actually go through and try to say who they're going to take with their picks. But
Tua.
Shut up. But I do think – but I do think there is something we can assess, and that is the state of the Red Wings. And as we go into this quasi, who knows what's going to happen over the next couple months of drafting and free agency and all that, what this team needs to do going forward. That we saw the other day, this is Eiserman's officially been in the chair for a year now. We've seen some stuff. Russ, I know you put it out there. You know better than I do. There's been some new faces in the locker room, something we don't really see that often with the Detroit Red Wings, or we haven't gotten used to. But, Jay, stay the Red Wings right now, and where do they need to be steering the ship going forward?
Everything's pointing towards the draft. Regardless of what we do or don't see with the season coming to an end, or if it's already ended and we just don't know it yet, it's all about the draft at this point. I thoroughly and selfishly want them to get talent that plays.
Okay.
It's developed. I know it's very hard to tell a 18-year-old, hey, guess what? You're playing with the elite of the elite now, and you're taking primetime minutes on the ice, and you're on the second line. It doesn't happen too often. So I really do hope that we nail the draft, because it's kind of like for Quinn and Patricia, they need to nail this draft to buy themselves time. We need to nail this draft so we can start enjoying our time. We do have talented players in the system and on the roster, but we can't. You have to keep acting like you are the worst team and you have the worst players and no one's good, because it's a five guy sport. You need all the right pieces playing at the same time. I'm very focused on our first draft pick in the next draft, and I think we have to nail it in order to start making those steps in the right direction. So I think if that's like the tagline for the team right now, that's the only thing that's important in my opinion.
Okay. I don't mind it. I don't mind it. Again, I put this in the rundown kind of as a joke. I'd only read a couple articles where the name was mentioned. But, Russ, I'll let you go first here. Is it time for Red Wings fans, Red Wings analysts, to stop getting on the Michigan connection of you were born here, you were raised here, automatically means you should play here? As I said, I've read a couple articles. How credible they are, I don't know. But Torrey Krug is an expiring contract and will be a free agent. And everybody who is a heart of the wing wheel thinks that we should be going after him full tilt.
I am not one of those people. I'll put that up right up there.
Okay. That's fine.
Torrey Krug talented? Yes. Would he be the best defenseman on this team? By far. Torrey Krug is also 29, and the average age of this team is a hair over 30. You do not get better when you're trying to get younger by grabbing someone who is the average age or older. He would be the seventh oldest skater on the team. With his contract projection at 5 years, it's 7.5 per. He would be the most expensive player on the team as well. They have a chance to do something here. Projected $37.7 million in cap space. Now, Mantha's got to get re-signed, Bertuzzi, Fabbri. But even with that, I grabbed their projections. I threw it in there for Mantha, Bertuzzi, Fabbri, Gagne and Timoshov, assuming they re-sign all of those. That's going to spend about $16.5 million. You have $21 million left. Does Krug fit in there? Sure, he could. He could. Also, you remember when the Maple Leafs had to trade Marlowe away and gave a first-round pick away to do it? Go do that. I literally have four teams that I was looking through their cap situation for next year, and if we don't get to this $84 million as a cap with which we won't because the whole world shut down for coronavirus and revenue's falling, they're going to be in a shit ton of trouble. St. Louis has Pietrangelo up. They have less than $5 million in cap right now. If the cap goes down, they're not even going to have enough to pay the peanut vendor, let alone Pietrangelo. Go grab someone from them. Go grab like Bozak. Steal a second rounder from them. Use that cap space to do something other than getting an aging, albeit talented defenseman, and make the future brighter. Jay's got the same strategy as walking into a bar. Hey, what's on draft? That's what I care about. He's 100% right. So strengthen your position. Strengthen your position now. Strengthen your position later. They're bad. We get it. They're going to be bad. It's like taking your medicine. Suck it up. It's going to be bitter. But you do it so you can be better. So that when the time comes, you can enjoy yourself.
Okay. Yes, sir.
So, yeah. Anything.
All right. I'm about to show my a little bit of my ignorance, but I want to try to play devil's advocate here. You mentioned how Krug would be right around the average age. He'd be the seventh oldest skater on the team. Yep. I get that. And when you're looking to get better, you want to try to get a little younger. I need one of you, and I don't care who it is. You can throw the hand up after I ask the question. Wouldn't the perk of it be, though, you're gaining talent you don't have and you're gaining NHL experience that you necessarily don't have at that level on that blue line with Torrey Krug, and he's a contract you can afford, and yes, he's 30. We're all 30. I'd like to believe that we're all still young individuals.
I am not in my prime
nowadays
anymore.
You see... No. I'm not trying to say that at all, but what I'm trying to say is in today's NHL, 30 now appears to, for most guys appears to be like dead middle of the road. Nope. You still got some
time.
No,
it's actually the age curve studies have been done that you're on the decline. 27 is the prime.
30.
Oh, okay. All right.
And if I can, Eric, let me jump in here. The fact that he is 30 and he's going to get north of the 5.7 he's making right now, this is his last big contract. This is his last big, hey, you're relevant. Here's term. Here's money. He would bloat up our cap space for like four plus years.
Probably five.
And we already have that with Ablicator right now. So getting him, yeah, it's nice, but like we're not going to win probably in the next couple of years. It's just going to constipate the amount of money that we won't have by having him. You know who would make this move? I bet you could tell me.
Who?
Ken Holland.
It'd be Ken Holland.
Oh, yeah.
If we weren't, he's got a, Torrey Krug has a modified no trade clause. There's eight teams he won't play for. So chances are we're probably one of the eight. But Ken Holland would
be. He's also a free agent, though.
Okay, so yes, when
a no trade clause means nothing. We'd be getting him straight off the market, my friend.
I wonder if we're one of those eight, though, and he would just say no.
You can't argue that he won't say, hey, Russ, I will come to you here and say, you can't argue that he'll say no. But what I'm saying is we're talking about this team needing to get better. I understand through the draft is a way to do that, through the system of Grand Rapids and the talent we have down there. But at some point, an established name of some capacity needs to come to this team. And we've been arguing, I've been saying it for forever, that I think that blue line is where we need it. We've got enough guys to put the puck on net that appear to be capable of doing so. Now we need someone that's going to make it so Jimmy doesn't have to stand on his head every night and can also tell DeKaiser, get the hell out of the way.
And he would help, but it's also like putting a race car seat in your beat-up old-ass Buick. Like, it's only going to do so much. He could help. But he's also going to take up a roster spot. I'm not debating that in the next 2 or 3 years, he's going to make this team better. Hands down. Can't argue with you. He could help the progress of some young defensemen coming up if he doesn't make sure that they stay in Grand Rapids by taking their spot. That's also something that Sider's expected to come up this year. Lindstrom's expected to take more of a role. Hronik, we need Chalowski to finally grab a roster spot and just do something with it. So that's four guys that we want to put in premier situations that Torrey Krug can do just about anything they do better, hands down, but he doesn't let them develop. So when this team's ready to be good in 4 years and Torrey Krug's looking at 34 and he's on the downswing, what are we doing? We're staring at these same bad contracts that we're so excited are coming off the books this year. He's good. Don't get me wrong. But this team isn't trying to be good right now. I don't think that's the point.
Okay. Obviously, I'm not comparing him to this guy because no one can be compared to this guy, in my opinion, outside of Bobby Orr. All those years, these young defensemen played in the system. They played under Nick Lindstrom. They played under these great defensemen and got the experience. You're talking about Sider, Chalowski, these guys coming up. Well, I would much rather they come up and spend those 3 years with a guy like Krug than their number one veteran presence on that blue line being Danny DeKeyser. We can afford to have him. We can afford to have him. I know he takes a spot, but I would much rather have Sider spending 3 years on a blue line learning from a guy like Torrey Krug. I'd rather Chalowski get exposure with a guy like that who knows how to do it right so that, yeah, when his 3-4 years are up, that's 3 or 4 years these guys saw how to do it the right way, not developing bad habits and getting the ability to say we learned from someone who knows how to do it and we're prepared for that.
I agree with the theory of what you're building. I just think we've been screwed from deals past that we don't get that luxury this go around. We don't get that, you know, apprentice master setup that would probably make for a great understanding of the league. It's going to be throw them on the ice and someone better grab the bull by the horns and become that master immediately, hoping it's a Sider or a Lidstrom or Chalowski. I had high hopes on Chalowski as well, but I don't think we have that luxury, which blows. It really does. That's why I point towards goaltending to fill out that defensive side of the puck. But I don't know. We're going to have a point in time where we get to handpick that elder defenseman or soon to be elder defenseman and say, look, you are this nice little puzzle piece for our team now. This pushes us towards a deeper run at the playoffs. It's just we're doing it. We might be doing it too
soon. You're also overpaying for an asset that's declining. So it's bad economy. But to the Lidstrom point, that 91 team when he made his rookie debut, they had 98 points. Like, that was a good team. They won their division. They had the luxury of being able to do that with Lidstrom. And then from then on, I mean, that was the playoff streak. Like, this was always a good Red Wing team. You always could do that because, like Jay said, you had the master and apprentice because you had good talent there. I don't think Krug is going to be comparable to some of these guys that got to go through that system and bring up one after the other. Not with where we're seeing him. 5 years ago, 100%. 5 years ago, I think you're spot on with it. But he's going to be on the downside, and it's, I don't know. It's a better story that he's coming back home than he is making the Wings better.
Okay. Now how about we get Cam Fowler? No, I'm kidding. And I wasn't trying to assess that like Lindstrom got that same experience too. What I was trying to say is when like after 2002-03, when we started kind of thinning out a little bit and we were still a good team, but we weren't necessarily cup contending year after year, you had these young defensemen come through our system and they got to experience how a consummate professional prepares, plays, treats the game. And that's just something I think we don't have right now. And I just would like to see guys like Sider and Chalowski and those guys come up and get that again. You get to see a guy who knows how to do it right every single night. And that way they learn from right from the get-go. First NHL experience is the right kind of experience as opposed to let's try to figure it out on the fly. That can sometimes shake confidence too. You go out there and get beat night after night. You got someone like Krug saying, hey, it's going to happen. Happens to everyone. Even Nick Lindstrom got beat once, from what I hear.
Yeah. No, Nick was fantastic. You probably could have put Nick on this team with no help, and he still would have been just fine.
Mm-hmm. It is what it is. Okay, so we answered the direction to go to, but now, Jay, what starts that direction? You mentioned goalie.
I want goalie so bad.
Goalie, can you, and again, this is me asking the questions as the interviewer, a little less than knowledgeable on it. Can you really say there's a goalie, whether it be free agent or draft, affordable, that we can put in net immediately? I don't feel like a goalie right out of the draft does not happen.
No, and we don't have anything and we've got nothing in the farm either. There's no shiny, we'd have to get creative with cap space, trades, picks, some other type of asset to acquire the goalie that I think we so desperately need. Unfortunately, we're just going to have this rotating carousel of another team's backup as our team's starter. and see what happens. I am concerned about the goalie end because I see what we're building offensively. Defensively is a little bit of a question mark. It's going to be from the farm, but goalie is like, that could be the turning point where we get the Krugs in the off season because we're ready for it. And I don't know. I don't know how to address goalie. I can pontificate as much as I want. No fucking clue.
I have an idea of how to do it.
But it needs to happen.
Close your eyes and guess. Goalies are voodoo. Goalies are to take a guess. There's been one goalie in the last 10 years to lead the NHL in save percentage for more than 1 year. I'll save us some time. Brian Elliott. That's it. Right? Yeah, goalies are voodoo, and you cannot predict them from year to year. It is one of the biggest statistical confounding things to even look at in hockey. There are some of the brightest minds I've ever met. I will listen to them talk, and someone in the crowd asks them about goalies, and they go, I don't know. Like, why did the ant turn left instead of right? I don't know that either. There's so many different factors, and a lot of it is just that, hey, goalies are weird, right? You can't predict it, and the angle of the shot, how many people are in the way, just there's so many different things that affect a goalie to where you could have a guy be a 920 one year, he could be a 900 the next year, and almost nothing's changed. You can't definitely say that the goalie's any better or not. So you can't – my suggestion, go the Jonathan Bernier route. Grab some guys like that, try and hit on him. He, from an expected goals standpoint, Bernier was better than Frederick Anderson this year. And not by a little amount. He was actually almost top five in the league. But you never know because his team's so bad. It's good luck. Try and good luck.
Okay, all right, here we go. This could be fun or this could end up not even making the show. I'm going to ask you both to be a little bit of a philosophizer.
You've got a philosophizer.
Ooh, I love philosophizing.
I want to see you do some philosophizing. Look at big names. I'm going to scatter through here. I'm not going to stay in our generation. Look at Vasilevsky. Look at Patrick Waugh. Look at Brodeur. Look at guys like that, like Hasek. Now look at the goalies that you would call middle of the road. Probably Jimmy, guys like that. And Jay, with everything in your hockey knowledge and Rolodex up there, what is the difference here? What is the, like, what is it about those guys that maybe doesn't translate to a guy like Jimmy, who at one point was considered a good goalie, or I'll say above average goalie in the NHL?
Wow.
Yeah, I know. I can ask tough questions. Russ?
I don't know what the difference is between then and now. Like I mean, you can't just say like it's the speed of the game. That's like, yeah, no shit. We're playing faster hockey. I don't know what it could really be.
So it's a defined style.
Russ, what do you got?
It is a defined style that they can execute. Hasek was unique in that he showed you an opening so that he could not only take away the one that you would go to, but the one after that, after he made a move. His big sprawling thing, if you watch him in tape, he does it over and over and over because it's a move. It isn't him ad-libbing on spot. He was so cerebral he was able to do that. Waugh was overly aggressive. These were different things. Even more recently, Jonathan Quick, his athleticism, he would attack angles at a certain way and be able to contort his body to come back because he knew he could do it. And the shooter wasn't expecting him to. If you're predictable, if you're a goalie that does what other goalies do, these shooters are too smart and they're too good and they will figure you out. It's part of the reason why you constantly have to change and why it's so hard to predict goalies from year to year. So if you have a defined, unique style like some of these goalies, that's what can elevate you to being at the top. And you always have to be not only flexible enough to do some of these crazy-ass shit they do, but flexible enough to adapt your style and dictate shooters. If you don't, then you're taking what you can get, and you can be good at it. This was Osgood, right, that he took what he could get, and he played within his system, and he played well. But he wasn't that next tier because he didn't dictate play.
Because I'm legally obligated to bring him up in almost every show, I would almost say Osgood kind of fits that Ben Wallace-like thing. He fit where he needed. Listen to me, though. No, because you said that, and it's the first thing I thought of. Ben Wallace on almost any other team, not that great. Ben Wallace fit into a perfect system of he knew what he was required to do. Same with Osgood. Osgood knew, I don't need to make some sprawling Dominic Hasek-like save, or I don't need to, like Patrick Waugh with the Statue of Liberty in that. I need to just make the safe, smart saves. I have enough defense and talent around me that I'm not going to see 50 shots tonight. I'm going to see a conservative amount. I just need to make sure I limit the mistakes. It's the same with Ben Wallace. He knew he didn't have to score 20 points a game. He knew he had to get 15 rebounds a game. And that's what I'm saying. Like Osgood and Russ, I know I've talked to you about this a million times. You look at Chris Osgood's numbers, they're relatively matching of Patrick Waugh's, but we don't talk about them in the same light. Yeah. Partly because Patrick Waugh's hoisted 50
Osgood
Stanley
also
Cups.
Didn't have to have the Wings chase him out of every new job that he got. So any time to bring that up.
It's true. It's true.
I feel like I just got told to accept that goalies are a luck of the draw. Like I check my weather app on my phone, and I don't know what I'm actually going to get.
Take who you
day in and day out.
And you're probably not too far off because there's an innate thing that we kind of get. We're mostly rubbish at it though. But then look at what they do year over year. It's not consistent. It's not great. Like the last 10 years, save percentage leader, which is a meh statistic as far as actually measuring their quality, but Khudobin, Ben Bishop, Carter Hutton, Sergei Bobrovsky, Brian Elliott, Carey Price. You'll notice two of them, Khudobin, Bishop, played for the same team. You can be a product of your system and be a good goalie if you have a good team. You still have to be decent, right? But these aren't individual goalies. Like you wouldn't guess Khudobin, Carter Hutton, and Brian Elliott if we said top five goalies in the league right now. You probably wouldn't. There's so many other factors right. that depend on it, and that's why I kind of bristle at, hey, let's go get a goalie first because you got to help him, or else he's going to be garbage. I mean, like,
right?
We had Tim Thomas show up for like 2-3 years and went away, right? But Tuukka Rask was really good in there too because Boston was ready to have a goalie get hot, and they were really good.
Yeah,
right. So what you're telling me is that we're going to be able to have Carter Hart soon because Philly's going to chase him out eventually, and Philly's always revolving their door between the posts. So I'm happy. We're going to get Carter Hart soon. This is great.
And this is a long this is really a long walk to circle back, but we have to circle back because Russ kind of led right back to the path. Jay wants a goalie. That's his number one need. Russ, like you said, and I tend to agree a little bit with because I made it clear. I think the blue line's the first address. Jay wants a goalie. I want a defenseman. What is the piece needed right now to start it back in that direction of we're trending up?
Alexis Lafreniere. I mean, that's the piece. I mean, it's young star talent. I don't think anything else is going to get you back up there. You have a top line. Larkin, Mantha, and Bertuzzi can be a quality number one line in the NHL. For now, you have maybe 5 years at most of that being the case before Mantha's 30, Larkin's 27 or 28, right? Like, you have a limited window. You have to get star power now if you want in that window to start being good again. So it's a Lafreniere. It's taking a chance on a second-round guy who fell because of whatever reason. Maybe he's Russian and people don't like drafting Russians still for whatever reason. Like, that's what you go after. I don't want to see a big free agent splash. If you want to like do something like bring in a Sam Gagne so we have a right-hand shot on the power play, great. That's a supplemental piece that can then let your young players get showcased. And if those young players like Zadina don't get showcased and get the chance to grow and are forced into bottom 6 minutes, you're not going to exploit that window. So eventually we'll need a good goalie. Yes. In the meantime, keep plugging away at the Robin Leonards and Semyon Varlamovs and the Berniers that are floating around. Just keep it going. 2-year deals. Keep them cycling in and out. Sorry, Jimmy, you were historically bad. You can be gone. That's my roadmap for right now.
I love how when we are analyzing needs in a roadmap, we are kind of understanding how an NHL team rebuilds. And it's almost weird that it's get as deep as possible offensively and figure out the rest of the shit later. because then that's what you're going to grow. Like, that's a weird philosophy of, hey, you want to win the cup and you're a nobody? This is probably the way to do it. That's so, like, that's, I would like to have concrete pillars on a team, but now it's be great up front and figure out like your back end later.
As probably the least, yeah, pretty much. As pretty much, but I will say it's pretty much the least knowledgeable of the three when it comes to hockey. I feel like goal scoring and the ability to, you know, to do that is the easiest thing to try to. I mean, obviously you can't predict like an Ovechkin or a Cross. I mean, maybe a Cross, but you can't predict these guys being that good. You can predict they're good. But if you're someone that can, you know, that can score the puck with ease, that's going to translate to almost everywhere. If you're given the ability, like we said, with the goalies are, you know, they're like just picking out of a hat. You don't know necessarily what you're going to get from year to year. But I do say, I think that's the smartest strategy, because that seems to be what we have. We have a bunch of young talent that hypothetically can bury the puck. We don't really have anybody that can stop the puck. So I guess load up on that makes sense.
Yeah, it is. Goal scoring is certainly the most quantifiable thing we have right now, just from a statistical standpoint. It's the closest to a measurable event directly, so it's the easiest to quantify. Defense, we're just really starting to get tools that can start to get to it. Goalies, we're not even close. So yeah, you're right that it is most simple to identify high-end scorers. So yeah, eliminate the risk and get those, because those are great, and you win not by not giving up goals, you win by scoring more goals.
Hey, nothing wrong with it. I would like to say I did, before the show, I did text a friend of the show. You guys have both met him, I know, but probably the person I think is the most knowledgeable about hockey I've met in my years in radio, Sean Beligian. I texted him to ask him what he thought about it. And he gave me a doozy of an answer, guys, on what the Red Wings need to start heading in the right direction. This is the answer we all forgot to mention. Sean sent me back one word, and it said,
he's not wrong.
The piece of crap that he is. Yeah.
that's. I mean, find something. It's like drafting a great pass blocker. Like, you got to grab that talent in the first round and grab what you. Identifying talent is important.
Me flying off the cuff.
Say, actually, it's a bold strategy to decide how we're going to get better is to get better players. It's bold. It's innovative. I like it.
So yeah, it's a unheard of strategy. Let's see if it works out for him, Cotton. Real quick, flying off the cuff before we end the show, because Russ saying how it's the hardest thing to quantify, the hardest thing to scout, and because we love to remind everyone that Justin is the GM of anything we do. We're going to end this show with the. Well, I honestly think this could be the easiest question you have to answer all day, Jay, or it could be the toughest, because I'm going to put you a little bit out of your comfort zone. You're the GM. I'm not going to tell you of what. With you're the new GM. With your first pick, whether it's the first pick, the 30th pick, whatever, would you feel more comfortable finding a 20-year Pro Bowl quarterback, the next 5-tool player for a Major League Baseball program, or a goalie you can honestly say you're going to stick in net for the next 10 years and know he's going to get at least, let's say, 70% of the starts every year?
Yeah, well, I mean, I can find a Don Kelly all over the place, so I'm good on baseball.
A screwdriver, a hammer, a set of pliers, a belt
cleaner. Yeah, he's the mate.
Donnie Kelly, baby.
Man at Comerica.
After being enlightened on some really good stuff on goalies, you could argue the uncertainty of a goalie is almost as valuable as the most valuable position in football, which is the quarterback. I think it's because the draft is on the horizon, but if I'm that GM, I'm grabbing that QB because that's exactly what I want to happen on Thursday. Like, I want that. I closed the book. I want to open anew on Thursday. And it's an anew with two. And that's what I would pick as GM. God, who employed me for this shit?
So who is it? The Snyders in Washington. They'll take anyone these days.
Thank you.
I will not work for that reason. You cannot make me.
Proud of you, Russ?
I literally could not tell you if a goalie is good or not in the draft, right? So I'm going to rule that one out. 5-tool player, I'm rereading Moneyball right now and hearing about how all the pitfalls of all the scouts and drafting high school players. So there's a really good chance I'd have to draft a high school player, and I'm not pinning my future on a 17-year-old kid. So we can rule that one out. So I guess I'm stuck with QB as well. And assuming I'm the general manager, I'm a little more comfortable in that because I'm only hiring a coach who will do like what John Harbaugh did and go, no, 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 no. You're going to fit the system to this QB. You're not going to try and make him something he's not. And that's, I mean, we've seen so many times that break a quarterback. Andre Ware, I mentioned earlier, they didn't let him be what he wanted to be, and it blew up in everyone's face. So I'm more comfortable that I could make a team work with a quarterback who's older than any of these players being drafted, so more likely to be who he is than any of the rest of them. I'm minimizing risk and covering my ass, so I'm ready to be a GM. It's his fault.
But listen, man. Though you take a high school, you could get Bryce Harper.
Yeah,
you could get Billy Beane. I see where you're going with that. Like, there's, and nothing to Billy Beane. The guy had a major league baseball career. That's more than any of us can say. He actually played for the Tigers for a year. But again, he was supposed to be the second coming. He was the next big thing, and I think he was out of the league 5 years after he was drafted. I mean, obviously, great career with Oakland, revolutionized the game and what he did, but it's insane to think. I don't know anything about hockey, so therefore, if you ever let me pick your goalie, you're in trouble. I'm a little ashamed neither of you went with hockey. Come on, back that confidence you have for knowing hockey. You guys have both seen me play softball. I couldn't even get Justin to stop rounding the bases when the ball was already on its way in. So I don't think we should ever trust me with a baseball decision. Football was the only sport I was ever quasi good at. Justin likes to tell everybody I was a quarterback, and I love him for that. I'll give you your payment later on. So I would have to say a quarterback. I think I could. You give me the time, I can probably tell you who's going to be the guy. So, I mean, it's got to be a quarterback. And what's weird to say is I never thought I would say picking a quarterback might be the easiest of the three. And that's – you look at the number of quarterbacks that make it to fail, it's so insane to think. So, it's weird. It's weird. But, Jay, I still think you should try to find a 5-2 baseball player. I'd love to see what you come up with. I have definitely would. That's going to do it for us here on Armchair Sports Talk. Another fun one. Obviously, keep an eye on the Twitter over the next couple of days. We're going to try to put out as much as we can as the draft comes. And then if I can get these guys around a computer for an hour, we'll try to do a little bit of a draft recap later on in the week, see what the Lions do. Jay, I just want to say before we say goodbye, I'm really, really sorry that Tua Tagovailoa went to the Miami Dolphins.
Ooh, don't put that voodoo on me.
But in all reality, I want to thank Sergeant Salty Justin Marcus for another good one, buddy.
Hey, I'm happy to be here, and I can in fact say that what we do does bring out the best in people because all of our wives are drinking together probably every time we podcast during quarantine. So we are producing something else as well. So
I think we truly are bringing people together. Aww. And that's what great. And as always, Statman Russ Ivanek, listen, he literally created half the show while we were doing the show, just with great responses that led to me coming up with more fun things to say. The guy's creative in all ways.
Always. Thanks for having us. Yeah. I'm going to gloss right past that immature comment there. It's a blast, guys. I can't wait to see how the NFL teams are going to mess up this webcast of the draft. Hopefully it's not the Lions. Hold your breath. Watch them pick a tackle after being frozen on the screen for 7.5 minutes. Oh, yeah, it'll be fun. I look forward to talking to you guys about it as we weep into our beers.
I've never been more excited for them to take another tight end. And as always, I am your host, Eric Dorsch. That is one small step for us. One giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.